This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In this week's episode, Ryan Gosling becomes the first man on the moon for Damien Chazelle, while Jonah Hill makes his directorial debut with mid-90s. But we're going to get things started with Damien Chazelle's First Man, which on the surface feels like an old-school throwback to the astronaut movies of the past. But in reality, for me personally, I felt it was a masterclass in intimacy through the use of the camera. And I'll obviously explain what I'm talking about with that. Hopefully not sound too much like the film professor I am. But I guess what I'm talking about here is, you know, I think people have a certain perception of this film. And, you know, like I said, it does have that appearance of an old school throwback. And it definitely is that. But I feel like it's much more interesting than that. And sort of through the use of the camera, you know, I feel like they do a lot of close-ups and extreme close-ups that always seem to keep us in close proximity to Neil, letting us, you know, experience the world as he does. And I really loved even just the simple scenes of, like, from the shuttle. Obviously, I'm sure part of it was a money-saving measure, but it worked out perfectly where you just do POV shots from inside the shuttle, and I thought it made it really visceral, putting the audience sort of directly sort of in his space. And I think that it's interesting to talk about this in terms of Neil Armstrong, the character. Obviously, this is his journey. This is about, you know, obviously being the first man to walk on the moon, as you know, every American should know. Obviously, if you don't, something's wrong. But what's interesting about that use of the camera and, you know, keeping it in close proximity to Neil is because, you know, I find it that's such a fascinating movie, because Neil Armstrong isn't necessarily a very cinematic character, because he is not very sort of outgoing and very sort of outspoken. And I think Ryan Gosling is very good in the role. I just think he's so good that I think it's unfortunate, because people are not gonna give him the kudos he deserves, because he's essentially playing the man as he's meant to, and I think people aren't going to be impressed, but they should be, because he's capturing literally, as people have said, and as Armstrong's family have said, because they've been a big part of it, he, like, captures him almost really perfectly. But I think Gosling and Claire Foy in particular are really good, and they're sort of the main focus, you know, other than, you know, pretty much every scene revolving around Neil. The only exceptions are the ones that revolve around his wife, and I think Claire Foy really brings it. I think it's really interesting to, you know, how she sort of builds and then has these explosions of emotion sort of at different points, and I think it really interesting because of that. But, you know, I gotta be honest, you know, obviously Damien Chazelle has quite the track record, you know, big breakthrough, although it wasn't his first official film. Most people know his big breakthrough as being Whiplash, a really great award-winning film, and then of course he followed that up with La La Land. But this film, First Man, is definitely the most, I would say, different, although not that Whiplash and La La Land have that much in common other than their music. But I just find it really crazy that he's made these three films that feel so distinct from one another and different. And obviously this film is different for him because he's not working from his own writing and his own script. I'm working from a Josh Singer script, who is wrote Spotlight, the award winner a couple years back. I don't know, I just really, you know, I'm passionate about this film, and obviously I'm going to talk more about it, but I'll turn it over to Ryan for now and we'll get back to it.
So there are a lot of stakes for me in this particular review for a few reasons. The first being that what film is to me, the space program is to my father. So I am very well versed in basically any of the goings on of the Gemini and the Apollo missions. And, you know, even up to the day with what's going on with NASA and Elon Musk at SpaceX. And it's really hard to put your feelings aside about that guy. But either way, in addition to that, I also have a burning resentment of Damien Chazelle because we are the same age and that should have been me, damn it. But it's not, and here I am. So I really had issues with La La Land. I've seen it about 30 times. Then that's not an exaggeration or a joke or anything. I've seen it. I know you've only seen it once. I saw it. It's been on HBO, and I was out of work last year, so I took it as my personal mission last August or September to really just analyze it and to see what the hell is going on in it, and I still can't. I don't know what to make of it. And I guess watching Moonlight take over Best Picture was a bit of schadenfreude that I needed in my life at that time. But here we are with First Man, and like you said, it is a very different film than anything he's made before, and it is the kind of movie that I would prefer to see from him, because I knew exactly how I felt watching walking out of the theater. And I quite like this. I think the first 45 minutes in particular are very good at showing what it means to Neil Armstrong. Not necessarily, you know, they set up his backstory where, you know, he and his wife lose a child to cancer back in 1960, and how he kind of uses joining the space program and getting into NASA as working through his grief, because he has no idea how else to do that. And there's this emotional distance that builds between him and his wife. Obviously, they still love each other, but, you know, losing a kid can take a hell of a lot out of you. And you're right about the performances. And I think Ryan Gosling, I know he gets a lot of crap for kind of doing this. You know, he has two speeds. It's either a comedy, happy-go-lucky Ryan Gosling, or you get, you know, the stone-faced Blade Runner Ryan Gosling. And here, obviously, it's a much more serious performance. But I feel like he wears that emotion a little bit more palpably on his sleeve. So it might be able to bring in people a little bit more who might be feeling left cold by some of his other dramatic performances. Claire Foy gives her character a lot of life, too. And what could have just been the, bring my husband back home role, and it's she's good, and I think that's a credit to Giselle being a very mindful filmmaker and just wanting to tell this story from a humanist standpoint. And, you know, yeah, movies like Apollo 13, The Right Stuff, and, you know, to a lesser extent, your popcorn fare like Armageddon and Deep Impact, which are total garbage compared to the other two, but that's neither here nor there. This is a different film. This is very much rooted in the idea of one man and not necessarily his journey in this historic event. This historic event that is also rife with controversy, obviously, from the citizens of the United States and from the government wondering why all our tax dollars, while we're fighting a war in Vietnam, are still going into this program. And we have people who are going hungry, you know, people with medical bills that they can't afford, et cetera, et cetera. So it brings up a lot of valid questions, and they don't all necessarily get answers, and maybe they didn't even need to be raised in this particular movie, but it does show you what Neil Armstrong was up against. So when he finally gets to the moon landing itself, which is played out beautifully, it's a very cathartic moment. And even if it's, you know, I have my own personal reservations about what the purpose of the whole thing was to begin with, it's still, you feel good about what you just saw. And you mentioned that the use of the camera, obviously Linus Sandgren is really MVP here for me, because he just has this way of wrangling, like you said, intimacy and these grandiose moments. And there are just some incredible images of, you know, Neil Armstrong's shadow standing over the crater of a moon, and, you know, is just as jarring as seeing, you know, just a close-up of his face after his daughter's funeral while he's crying. I mean, it's very good work, and despite some of the scenes feeling a little too mechanical is not the right word, because I never felt like Giselle was meandering or that he didn't know exactly what he was doing. It's just something that, you know, I've heard about so many times growing up in my life, going to the Smithsonian Museum, that it didn't necessarily keep my interest because I already knew what was going on. Overall, this was pretty good.
I like that they didn't, you know, choose to focus on the other ensemble of the characters too much. I liked how they were just sort of, you know, there. But, I mean, what I really loved about the film was, you know, I really, you know, it really hit me emotionally in different ways that I wasn't expecting. Like, I really loved the idea of focusing this tale pretty much on grief in all its sort of forms as an astronaut. And obviously, you alluded to the daughter storyline. Honestly, you know, at different moments, I thought, it almost felt like a ghost story at times, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it's not, you know, obviously it's not to that degree, but just simple like visuals of Neil seeing his daughter, like, who's passed away, and just showing how it affects him and haunts him. I just thought that was so fascinating. And like I said, through Linus Sandgren's camera work, it really makes the impact on Neil, I think, boil to the forefront. But, you know, the idea of focusing on, you know, grief in this astronaut tale in general, I just find so fascinating, because not that the other astronaut films haven't, but they haven't dealt with it, I don't think, to this degree. And I thought it was really interesting showing, and this is not stuff I can pretend to be that knowledgeable about, so for a lot of it, it was my sort of first experience with this, seeing the different astronauts pass away through the tests. And I thought that just added to the overall experience and being invested in Neil's journey. And I don't know, I just really, you know, I was just really connected to the movie, and I wasn't necessarily expecting to. Like, it was one of these, you know, award season movies, I was like, oh man, I hope it isn't, you know, like I said, just like it appears on the surface, just as old school throwback tale, and I think it isn't. I think it's much more than that, and that's why I'm so depressed that this movie hasn't been doing better, because I feel like, you know, we were talking about it before this, I feel like this is a movie that's made for these older generations to go and see and build up the box office for this award season, but it's much more there sort of under the surface. So I'm just a bit disheartened that there isn't more of an audience for something like this. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, let's bring back the space program. Let's do it. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, we have the world, you know, we need to be exploring this. We need to be looking at these different things. And, you know, this film, I feel like, is as good an argument as any, although that's ironic because given some of the terrible things that happen in it. But I feel like that just shows, you know, it's life affirming when we get to that moment where Neo finally achieves it. And it feels like it's all been worth it through those struggles.
It's interesting that you bring up the subject matter regarding the earlier missions not being very widely known. Obviously, as soon as certain actors showed up on screen and they revealed their names, I was like, oh, he dies. And it's a credit to Damien Chazelle that he doesn't necessarily just kind of be, he's not flippant about it. He actually gives them a little bit to do. Patrick Fugit shows up early in this film. I mean, this is a kid. I think I hadn't seen him in anything since Almost Famous until Gone Girl came out a few years ago. And then from there, I can't really think of anything off the top of my head, maybe something here and there. But it's good to see him again, and it's a reminder of the talent that this guy has. And Chazelle knows how to use him. He casts him in the right role. He says his piece and he gets out. Same thing with Jason Clarke. It's all like Chazelle is never not in control. And I am amazed that this guy is such a refined filmmaker. Even going back to Whiplash, I just remember walking out of the theater thinking that, like, it's insane that this guy's first big movie. And, you know, La La Land, you know, say what you want about it. There was certainly a vision behind it. Whether it was for you or not, that's another story. And, you know, here he just continues that trend. I think it's interesting work from an interesting filmmaker that, like I said, I have a deep jealousy and resentment towards, but it's neither here nor there because he does everything that I feel like I would try to do. And that's I don't want to say flattery is the most sincere. I'm just kissing ass at this point, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm a bigger fan of it than you. Honestly, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. And that's no small feat considering I've seen a lot of good stuff already. I'm at TIFF and we'll get to one of those coming up just shortly. But honestly, I was really like, I don't know if it was because not that my expectations were low. I mean, I'm a big fan of Damien Chazelle, in particular Whiplash. I mean, I like La La Land more than a few people, but like I said, that may be just because I've only seen it once, although I did talk about one sequence in particular on my solo episode that I'm sure Ryan hasn't listened to yet. But it's neither here nor there. Other than that, you know, First Man, I mean, gets the highest recommendation from me. And I implore people to go see this. I'm not saying it's going to be for everyone, but it really had an impact on me. And I'm just a big fan. And I hope it does better and gets an award season re-release.
If it's any consolation, I don't listen to the episodes that I'm on either. But with that, we can turn our attention to directorial debut from Jonah Hill. Not a guy I would have ever pegged to have been. Maybe I should have, considering some of the output he's had in his career. But I never a guy I would have picked to be a director. But he really did prove me wrong with his feature film debut in mid-90s. His 16mm ode to the mid-90s, you know, shot in the Academy aspect ratio of 1:37:1. It stars Sonny Sully. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he plays this little kid named Stevie who's growing up in Southern California under a single mother with his, you know, maniacal brother played by Lucas Hedges. And oh my God, we're going to get to Lucas Hedges' performance in a little bit, but he just gets a couple moments. We'll get to it in a little bit. Because really, honestly, Sonny Sully can carry this film on his own. He kind of gets into this skating gang, I guess you want to call it. I was born like 5 years after these kids that are being portrayed in the film. But it's ultimately, I kept on coming back to the idea that this film really was about, whether it was conscious or not, this idea of how toxic masculinity can kind of force us into these situations where we're doing things that not necessarily might not be out of character, but are bringing really negative sides out of this. And, you know, obviously that's one of the only challenges that a straight white male has to face is learning how to kind of break that cycle of this stupidity. And obviously there's a lot of choice language in here, but at the end of the day, there's some camaraderie between all these kids, and they all have their, you know, their profane names. There's the kid fuck shit who you've seen in the trailer, and yes, fuck shit is a character name. There's fourth grade. There's Stevie is called Sunburn at one point. There's like a camaraderie and like a lived-in quality to this group that felt very authentic, and the fact that Jonah Hill actually cast real skaters instead of more polished actors really lends itself to that. So when they're just sitting around shooting the shit, you really feel that authenticity. It's beautiful to look at. Hill just really has this really, like, he knows his way around the camera. There are some very beautiful elegiac shots, almost, like, you know, just the kids skating down the freeway and the cars are just passing by in slow motion, and the soundtrack is wonderful, and it just chips away at that core of breaking any pretense of trying to just be some macho shithead and really just let people into your life. And I know that might sound like it's a recipe for a really corny saccharine film, but it's done in such a, and I really hate to continue to use this word, but an authentic way. It just feels right.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to see this movie, as I alluded to, back at TIFF with Jonah Hill and most of the young cast in attendance. So it was really cool to see that and get to hear Jonah Hill's amazing Q&A. I can say that. He was really, it's great that you talked about, you know, him as a director, because, like, he really blew me away with the Q&A afterwards. Just talking through it, he was clear. He knew what he was doing. He talked about, you know, some of the people who were influencing. You know, he had a dinner. He was at a restaurant in L.A. and, like, Ethan Coen was at another table, and he just went up to him, and Ethan Coen's like, oh, do you have any advice? I'm starting my directorial debut tomorrow. And he's like, oh, give me a few minutes. And then so Ethan Coen during his dinner thought about it and then came over and gave him advice. So I thought that was really fascinating. But getting back to mid-90s, you know, I'm a sucker for coming-of-age stories, so this is definitely in my wheelhouse. And you know, I really connected to the journey, you know, in particular you know, Sonny or, you know, Stevie was going on in the case of this film, despite never being a part of any sort of form of skate culture. It's never really been my thing, or not something, you know, I particularly have been into, but I thought it was handled in such a way that it was such relatable. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, these different types of characters with fun sort of character names. It was just, I don't know, it was just a really enjoyable experience. And this also is one of my absolute favorite films of the year, because it really just hit me at the right time. And like I said, had an impact, emotional impact on me that I wasn't necessarily expecting. But we do have to talk about, you know, some of this cast. I really liked, in particular, Stevie's friend Ray, played by Nakel Smith. They had a really interesting bond, and a couple scenes in particular that really hit home sort of what the film is going for, and I think it's really effective because of it. But you mentioned Lucas Hedges. You know, we had to talk about, you know, Lucas Hedges. You know, I was fortunate enough when I was at TIFF, I got to see multiple films from him. Mm-hmm. Boy Erased, I mean, just wait till you see that. I mean, his performance in particular, I mean, he's the best thing in the movie, and he's just unbelievable. And what's great is I can connect us to what Jonah Hill talked about in the Q&A. You know, he said, you know, he wanted to cast, you know, someone who was, you know, sensitive, and he was like, well, Luke, there's no one more sensitive than Lucas Hedges, sort of, as an actor. And he just, and, you know, this character type, if you've seen the trailer, like, you could see how, you know, this is sort of, you know, a cliche character, as you would think of it. You know, sort of the brother who beats on the younger brother, treats him like crap. But the reason that's become a cliche is because it's true in many forms. And I thought it was such a genius to cast Lucas Hedges in this role, because it's clearly against type for him. But like he said, like Jonah Hill said, it brings a sensitivity to the role that was sort of unexpected, and just some of the things that are not spoken in the film sort of boil to the surface just because he's such a brilliant actor. And Lucas, I mean, safe to say the sky's the limit for Lucas Hedges at this point. He's already delivered a number of classic performances, and I think it's only gonna get better from here for him. But you mentioned, you know, some of the sequences skating on the road. I particularly liked one sequence in particular where Stevie's first learning to skateboard. He's just in his driveway, and it's just a montage, just cutting of him just constantly trying to, you know, to get it so he can be cool and hang out with these kids or whatever. I just thought that was so fascinating. And there's just elements of culture that I didn't experience that I really like them, like going, you know, and skating around and just having all the, like, people of all different ages just being around and talking to them and stuff. I just thought it was really fascinating. But you mentioned sort of the masculinity part of it. Jonah Hill actually touched on that a bit in the Q&A, so I thought it was really great that you picked up on it, because that's something he was definitely going for.
Excellent. You know, I have dabbled in my freshman year of high school in the skating culture. You know, the this is going to be a bit esoteric, but you know, the gun range for the Warwick Police Department, and they have that skate park that's on the way back. Yeah, I spent a little bit of time there, but we won't get into that because I think my parents might still listen to this. this is, I want to go back to Lucas Hedges for a minute. This is my favorite young actor, like, you know, burgeoning young actor. Obviously, Sonny is a little bit younger, but I think Lucas Hedges really has a firm grasp on I don't want to say the joy in this film, but just like seeing the artifice of his character breakdown, you know, like from this, you know, tough shit listening to all the gangster rap and, you know, just pounding away on this little kid. But we see like little moments in which that slowly breaks down and the cracks show through. And then we show how he reacts in reaction to that. And it's really just some of the most powerful moments of the film. And I don't want to give away too much, but I feel that that's the best part of the rest of the film as well. And when you see those, like these artifices and these personalities that these people have built up, whether it was under the guise of this skating culture or whether it was something else that's going on that's a little more unspoken, and you know, it's even mentioned it, obviously Stevie is from a one-parent household, so that's it's dabbled with, but it's never explicitly stated, but you still know it's going on. And I think that's a credit to Jonah Hill. He knows that he trusts his audience to be smart enough. He doesn't have to beat us over the head with anything, so when those little moments actually come, there are small gestures that speak more than, you know, an entire 5 minute soliloquy could have. And honestly, I just want to see that. I don't know what other tricks he has up his sleeve, but this is very, very encouraging. And really, considering I'm a enthusiast of anything 90s aesthetic, I am very happy to see this.
Yeah, it's just the passion just comes off the screen. You could tell he's so connected to this. He grew up in sort of similar sort of way. So I thought it was really interesting that he sort of, you know, obviously, you know, as most great artists do, they take some elements of real life and then blow it up on the big screen. And in this case, you know, he was definitely entirely successful with it. But I also just wanted to mention great cameo by Harmony Korine. Just a very, very slight, for those of you who know Harmony Korine, I thought it was a very clever nod. And I think clearly, he was an influence on Jonah Hill in particular. So I thought that was just sort of an interesting, just sort of simple moment. But, you know, I just love all the kids in this movie. I think they're really fantastic. It was great to see them in real life as well. And just, you know, how, you know, their relationship just bonded together. And Jonah Hill had mentioned in the Q&A afterwards how it was great to make a film and set it in the mid-90s because essentially they could just toss the cell phones away. And honestly, the kids, like during the Q&A, they said they preferred it. They said it was great because they said they bonded all together and no one was ever on their phone, which just worked out perfectly. And I think the evidence is clearly there on the screen, especially with it. What a hell of an ending. Well, obviously I won't spoil it, but just a really great, impactful ending that brings the story to a close in a really great way. But yeah, much like you, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Jonah Hill does next, because because I think he's really good, really talented, and I'm very intrigued to see where he goes with his career.
Absolutely. And please feel free to continue shooting on 16mm. I feel like it's too much of a rarity. Not that I'm anti-digital. I just, you know, it's good to see every once in a while. But with that, we can turn our attention to next week, and we have a doozy on tap. We're going to be starting with Robert Redford's final performance and David Lowery's The Man with the Gun, Old Man with the Gun. And we're also going to be tackling Alan Smithee's take on the life of Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, it's technically The Old Man and the Gun, but yeah, beggars can't be choosers. Whatever. It's going to be a good movie, hopefully. Yeah. But we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening.